This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, September 18th, 2001. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The Taliban says it wants proof Osama bin Laden masterminded the attacks before it agrees to turn him over to the U.S. A former U.S. ambassador to Iraq speaks candidly about why Americans are so reviled in the Middle East. And the Justice Department is asking Congress for more investigative tools, including broader wiretapping capabilities. We'll have a report. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Aaron Glantz with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld said today that even if Osama bin Laden is turned over to U.S. authorities, the U.S. would probably go ahead with military action.
What we'll have to do is exactly what I said, use the full spectrum of our capabilities.
A Pakistani delegation has returned home after presenting the U.S. ultimatum for Osama bin Laden. The Taliban, however, says they will not unconditionally hand over the Saudi dissident, who is suspected of masterminding the terrorist attacks, without first seeing credible evidence. UPI reporter Arnaud Debograb has this reaction from Pakistan.
I think in return, they expect they're going to get some debt relief of the $37 billion debt they now owe the United States and international institutions. They expect U.S. involvement in the Kashmir dispute, along the lines of U.S. involvement in the Middle East between Palestinians and Israelis. They also expect and say that they have been promised this by President Bush, a return to the pre-nuclear build-up status quo in terms of the friendly relations between Pakistan and the United States that existed for many years and that stopped after the Pakistanis started testing nuclear weapons.
Taliban leaders are preparing their citizens to fight a holy war in case the U.S. attacks. Officials at the United Nations in New York are calling for a greater U.N. role in any anti-terrorism force. Susan Wood reports from the U.N.
U.S., NATO allies, and regional powers are expressing alarm over President Bush's plan to retaliate militarily against Afghanistan if that country's Taliban rulers refuse to hand over Osama bin Laden. Britain, France, and Germany have urged the administration to keep a cool head and avoid triggering a clash between the West and Islam. Among Muslim countries, Pakistan has said it would support efforts to fight terrorism under United Nations auspices. Iran's foreign minister said today countries around the world would only back a UN-supervised coalition. Also today, China and Russia, both permanent members of the UN Security Council, said any U.S. military action must respect international law and avoid harming Afghan civilians, who are already at risk of death because of armed conflict, drought, or poverty, according to the UN. Last week, the Council adopted a resolution that, in its words, unequivocally condemns Tuesday's terrorist attacks and calls on all states to work together to bring to justice both the perpetrators and the sponsors of those attacks. Speaking yesterday on CNN, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan said the Council and the 189-member General Assembly would likely stand by that decision. He cautioned, however, against any action that might further inflame tensions in the Middle East. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Susan Wood at the United Nations.
Presidents and diplomatic leaders from around the globe have been heading to Washington, D.C. this week to share their sympathies and their levels of commitment to the United States. Gareth Schweitzer reports on the French from the Capitol.
President Bush can expect a heartfelt expression of support this evening from French President Jacques Chirac, although his French counterpart will likely express his reluctance to strike back rapidly at any nations accused of harboring terrorists. Jeffrey Kemp, director of regional strategic programs at the Nixon Center,
expect moral support, political support, economic support, diplomatic support, but when it comes to military support, the French will be very cautious about what they offer.
Although the French want precise evidence regarding the perpetrators of last week's devastation, they, like many European nations, lost citizens in New York last week. The eradication of terrorism is therefore a priority for the French as well. In Washington, D.C., I'm Gareth Schweitzer for Free Speech Radio News.
U.S. reservists and soldiers in the National Guard have been called up, reporting to military bases and preparing for what they say is inevitable. Dave Lippman reports from North Carolina.
Among the first troops to be called up for expected retaliatory action are those from the Army's 82nd Airborne Division, located at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. But it remains unclear whether they're going to war against an army or mustering out to arrest one man, raising the specter of the overkill of the 1989 Panama invasion. Fort Bragg is also the headquarters for elite special forces units that have been deployed in counterinsurgency actions around the globe and have been the target of recent demonstrations against their interventions in Colombia. Whatever forces are mobilized, the order will serve to convert popular outrage into support for what President Bush has called, without explanation, a long war. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Dave Lippman in the Research Triangle, North Carolina.
And I'm Aaron Glantz for Free Speech Radio News.
Afghanistan's Taliban rulers today told a Pakistani delegation they would not hand over Saudi dissident Osama bin Laden to the United States until U.S. officials prove he masterminded the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. That is, U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld announced the possibility of retaliatory strikes against major Afghani cities, even if Osama bin Laden is handed over. Jeremy Scahill reports.
The clock is ticking as the world has stood in suspense, waiting for word out of Afghanistan on what the ruling Taliban will decide on the fate of Osama bin Laden. The man targeted by Washington is the top suspect in last Tuesday's attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon. A high-level Pakistani delegation has spent the last 24 hours in Afghanistan meeting with the Taliban. Pakistan says it has made clear to Afghanistan that it must hand over Osama bin Laden within 3 days or face massive retaliation from the U.S. Early reports out of Kabul indicated that the Taliban is negotiating for a handover of Osama bin Laden to what it called a neutral country for his case to be heard by a panel of independent judges. It's unlikely, however, that the Saudi millionaire would agree to his own extradition. In announcing that the Taliban has delayed a decision until at least tomorrow, Riaz Mohammed Khan of the Pakistani Foreign Ministry said his government is not negotiating with the Taliban, but presenting to the Afghan leadership the seriousness of the situation.
Our delegation conveyed in stark terms the gravity of the situation and what the international community expects from the Afghan leadership. Now, of course, it is for the Afghan leadership to take decisions, and we hope that they would take decisions which are in the interest of the Afghan people in Afghanistan, which have already suffered from ravages of war for the last more than two decades.
Regardless of what the Taliban decides on Osama bin Laden, all signals coming out of Washington indicate that the Bush administration intends to proceed with retaliatory strikes.
Osama bin Laden is just one person. He is representative of networks of people who absolutely have made their cause to defeat the freedoms that we understand, and we will not allow him to do so.
Do you want bin Laden dead?
I want him held. I want justice. And there's an old poster out west, as I recall, that said, wanted, dead or alive.
Today, Pentagon officials indicated that in addition to Afghanistan, Iraq could also be a potential target, they say, for Saddam Hussein's refusal to condemn last Tuesday's attacks. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld also indicated at a press conference today that Washington intends to target the capital city in Afghanistan and perhaps other countries in the event of U.S. airstrikes, calling them high-value targets.
Afghanistan is a very poor country. It is a country that has had several countries have exhausted themselves pounding that country and fighting. And as I think I've mentioned, it has a gross domestic product per capita of something like $700-$900 per person a year. So it is, they're not great things of value that are easy to deal with. And what we'll have to do is exactly what I said, use the full spectrum of our capabilities.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell has been pressing nations around the world to join the mission of Washington's war coalition, codenamed Operation Noble Eagle. Already, the U.S. has secured the support of NATO under its Article 5 clause, stating that an attack on the soil of one nation will be taken as an attack on all member states. NATO's Supreme Commander, U.S. General Joseph Ralston, told a press conference in Vienna today that this new war will be long and will bring what he called casualties.
We must all recognize that this is not a risk-free operation that we are embarking upon. there will be casualties. That is a necessary part of any military operation. So we cannot be in the mindset of a zero casualty operation. That's not what we're about. We have to get the mission done. We have to do the mission on a day-to-day basis. We will take all prudent measures to protect our people as best we can, but the mission will go on, and we will accomplish the mission.
There is a lot of apprehension in Europe over what exactly the Bush administration is planning. Though many leaders are officially backing Washington's war on terrorism, there is growing concern that civilians will be targeted and that a humanitarian catastrophe will be sparked. Portugal's prime minister has warned against what he called a bellicose action against an invisible enemy. Both Russia and China have called for restraint, with Beijing cautioning Washington to follow international law. Meanwhile, the United Nations is reporting that some 100,000 people have begun fleeing the Afghan capital, Kabul. Thousands are holed up at the border with Pakistan, with the government refusing to let them in. There is rising concern in Europe and around the world of the goals of America's response to last week's attacks. Tony Benn is a member of the Labour Party in the British Parliament and a leading critic of U.S. and British foreign policy.
You can't just identify somebody and say we'll kill him. I've no doubt he will be captured or killed. I think in either case it may very well be simulate more terrorist attacks. But at the same time, I really am not prepared to accept from anybody that someone who was, we know at the beginning, financed by the United States is all of a sudden the source of all our problems. You see, we've talked a lot about the corruption of power, it's a well-known phrase, but the corruption of powerlessness, when people feel powerless, they do dangerous things. And that's the root of a lot of terrorism.
Word is expected tomorrow out of Afghanistan on whether the Taliban will concede to the U.S. demands to hand over Osama bin Laden. But all signals coming from Washington indicate that such a move wouldn't be enough to avert what Vice President Dick Cheney has called the full wrath of the United States of America. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jeremy Scahill.
Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon told his army to halt attacks and withdraw from Palestinian-ruled territory today, hours after Palestinian President Yasser Arafat reissued orders for a ceasefire. The latest move, aimed at ending nearly a year of Israeli-Palestinian bloodshed, was driven by a U.S. effort to bring Arab countries into its campaign to forge an anti-terrorism alliance after last week's nightmare attacks on New York and Washington. With more on the story, Raphael Kraft reports.
Yasser Arafat made the first step this afternoon when he called on all Palestinian armed groups to cease fire even in case of self-defense. Israel's defense ministry then followed by announcing the withdrawal of all Israeli troops inside full Palestinian-controlled areas and to refrain from conducting further incursions in Palestinian autonomous areas. A number of truces had been agreed to since the start of the Intifada. The last one, on June 13th, didn't last long, and today's truce has already been infringed tonight in Hebron, where three Palestinians were wounded by Israeli forces. But the context is different today. Arafat is against the wall and does not wish to open its flanks to Israel, accusing him of orchestrating a terrorist campaign. American pressure on Israel is higher, too. A return to calm in the region will permit United States to include a greater number of Arab countries in the Bush so-called anti-terrorist coalition. Still in effect, Israel's condition of a complete cessation of violence during a period of 48 hours is to lead to a meeting between Yasser Arafat and Shimon Peres. In a declaration today, Israeli Foreign Minister Shimon Peres said, "It might be a turning point. There's no doubt that time has come for us to meet." For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Raphael Kraft in Ramallah.
The Bush administration's war on terrorism is beginning to take shape through the words of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, who says even the unlikely surrender of terrorist Osama bin Laden wouldn't stay the hand of the U.S. military. "Clearly, you began on a journey with one step, and he would be one step," Rumsfeld said. But he added, if bin Laden were not there, the organization would continue doing what it's been doing. So clearly the problem is much bigger than bin Laden. How much bigger is the question that begs? Rumsfeld went on to say, the Al-Qaeda network is a broad, multi-headed organization with a presence in 50 to 60 countries, including the United States. There are unconfirmed reports the people of Afghanistan fearing widespread attacks are fleeing by the hundreds of thousands towards the Pakistani border. In an open letter to the American people, Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein urged grief-stricken Americans to learn from the pain of Iraqis and Palestinians who have been suffering at the hands of the United States and Israel, he says. If your rulers from the United States and the West respect and cherish the blood of your people, why do they find it easy to shed the blood of others, including the blood of Arabs and Muslims? It's Saddam's statement, which was read by a broadcaster on Iraqi television. In the U.S., there's been little or no expressed responsibility on the part of the U.S. for terrorist actions. Many Americans have cloaked their grief in the American flag, using the tragedy to turn inward for strength and protection. But increasingly, more Americans are searching for answers to difficult questions about U.S. policies abroad. Edward Peck is the former U.S. ambassador to Iraq under the Carter administration. He also served as the deputy director of the White House Task Force on Terrorism in 1986. We asked Peck to comment on anti-American sentiment in Iraq and other parts of the Middle East.
It's something that goes down very hard with Americans because we really don't want to think about it. Given what we know about ourselves, it's almost impossible to understand that other people don't see us this way. So that I have read a number of articles by otherwise intelligent people who have suggested that the folks in the Middle East hate us because we're rich and because we bring them hip-hugger jeans, you know, and McDonald's sandwiches and hip-hop music, and they hate us because we're wealthy and they hate us, and this is the part that really grabs, because we believe in peace, freedom, human rights, and international law. Well, that's not why they hate us. They hate us because they don't think we believe in peace, freedom, justice, and international law. And from their perspective, and here's the key point, that doesn't make them right, but their perception is that we are hostile to the Middle East, to the Arabs, and to the Muslims, and they don't like us for this. And now, Iraq serves as a case in point.
Is that a fair perception on their part, or what is it based on?
Well, Ms. Brown, you see, this is what makes it nice about perceptions. They're fair in the eyes of the people who have them. So that, you know, somebody else's perception may be totally different than mine. That doesn't make them right and me wrong. You know, I chose this necktie because I think it's super, and somebody else says, good God, who gave you that? You know, it's a question of perception. You're allowed to have differing perceptions. It does not give one side the right to say, hey, we're right and you're wrong. But if you either ignore or pretend that they don't have differing perceptions, then whatever you're trying to accomplish in the Middle East, for example, it's just going to be that much harder to do. If the tape was indeed something that was filmed in 1991, and the organization that ran it, CNN, knew that it was, you know, a totally inapplicable use of that video, I think that's almost criminal. Almost criminal. But coming back to the other issue, the antipathy is widespread. The antipathy is widespread. The hatred is more narrowly focused, just like anywhere else. In any operation, in any organization, there are people who are the fervid, you know, believers, and others who are kind of adherents, and some who aren't even, you know, it's like religion. Some, you know, go to the mosque, the church, the temple religiously. Others go from time to time. Some don't go at all. But in the Middle East in particular, there is a great feeling that the United States is behaving in a manner which is not at all in keeping with the interests of the people who live out there. So that one of the things that I fear we're going to do, you may quote me and say that you heard it here first, one of the things that we're going to do by obliging, by coercing, by intimidating certain Arab, predominantly Muslim countries to adhere to and support our efforts against bin Laden and others, we are going to seriously erode and weaken the already weakened regimes which are the friendliest. Because their people do not like that any more than our people like the fact that we've been struck hard by terrorists and thus far haven't done anything. You know, how do these things start? They start, they grow, it's the movies, it's the media, it's the books, it's all the rest of it, the newspapers who have painted Muslims and Arabs into hostile folks that we need to be concerned about and worried about, and, well, not worried about enough, I guess, is the better way to put it. So it's widespread. But the ones who perpetrate these kinds of crimes are, of course, a very small, very worrisome part of the whole picture.
And I understand that you yourself, Mr. Ambassador, have taken quite a bit of verbal heat for speaking your truth on this.
Well, no, actually, I must tell you in all honesty that I've taken very little verbal heat. I've gotten an awful lot of laudatory comments from people who say, boy, you know, something resembling this kind of thinking has to at least be part of the mix. But I've gotten a couple of things that are quite worrisome, in which people are accusing me. I'm a veteran of two wars, and I was a paratrooper, and I don't take a back seat to anyone in terms of patriotism. Ms. Brown, this is the greatest nation that ever was. It may be the greatest nation that ever will be, but that is my perception, and it is not universally shared.
Former U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, Edward Peck, he served under the Carter administration. The Justice Department is seeking special new tools from Congress, including broader wiretap authority and easing of other restrictions on the FBI's investigative powers. And Congress is complying with SB 2500, a bill that, among other things, orders the CIA to rescind its ban on recruiting terrorist informants who have access to intelligence on terrorist plans and capabilities. It also allows U.S. attorneys to approve wiretaps and expands wiretap authority to cover computer communications and the tracing of computer communications over state lines with a single warrant. More from Robert Knight in New York.
Attorney General John Ashcroft is pushing Congress for new legislation to further facilitate FBI wiretaps of telephones, cell phones, and financial transactions in the wake of last Tuesday's attacks on the Pentagon and World Trade Center. Today in Washington, he delivered his legislative package to Capitol Hill. Ashcroft announced that the Immigration and Naturalization Service may now hold immigrant suspects for questioning indefinitely, overturning the prior rule that the alien suspects must be charged or released within 24 hours. Ashcroft also announced the sharing of electronic and other surveillance information among federal and local task forces headed by federal prosecutors in the terrorism investigation. But the enabling of digital telephony and roving wiretaps, along with online surveillance of the personal computers and communications of individuals presumed to be knowledgeable about or involved in hijacking, bombing, or other terrorist acts, has already come to passage. With the Senate's overwhelming approval of House Resolution 2500, with an amendment called the Combating Terrorism Act, which occurred with only a half hour's debate at the end of Senate business last Thursday. The bill eliminates the requirement for a court-ordered warrant before requiring Internet service providers to release email message header information and Internet browsing patterns of their subscribers to the FBI and other federal agencies. The bill also authorizes federal prosecutors, rather than judges, to authorize certain surveillance and wiretaps if they claim they are involved in a terrorism-related investigation. The bill treads on the First and Fourth Amendments, according to the Electronic Frontier Foundation and American Civil Liberties Union, which say that the surveillance of the content of telephone conversations without a judicial warrant goes far beyond the presumption of privacy when only the destination of a phone call was previously recorded by PIN registers. Ashcroft claims he intends to preserve the Constitution with the new surveillance regime, but Senator Patrick Leahy says of the Combating Terrorism Act that the United States, quoting, should not take steps towards becoming a police state or otherwise undermine our own freedom in the name of defending that freedom from terrorist attack, or the terrorists have already won. This, said Leahy, is a time for careful consideration, not passing legislation without debate or careful consideration of the consequences, end quote. The current legislation for House Resolution 2500 is due for a House-Senate conference markup within the next week. In New York, for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Robert Knight.
The insured losses in New York City and Washington, D.C. may total well beyond recent catastrophes such as Hurricane Andrew, a disaster wrought with insurance frauds and ripoffs. In weeks to come, analysts say, within the wide range of insurance claims, it will be important for people to recognize the potential for fraud. From New York, Jeff Brady prepared this report.
As insurance groups make good on their policies, Harry Schneider with the West Coast Consumer Union asks people to be extra careful when filing a claim.
In many cases, what happens is the insurance company comes out and says, well, here's a check for $25,000, and we need you to sign a waiver and release. And later on you find that somebody else who had similar injuries got $150,000. So it's very important that those injured not settle claims by signing waivers and releases or by depositing checks with endorsements that say this is in full payment of the claim.
A number of insurance companies, including New York-based Metropolitan Life and partner Re, are sustaining major losses from the terrorist attacks that destroyed the World Trade Center. Property damage, life insurance, and business interruption are among the losses covered. Consumers Union Harry Schneider says during a major disaster, it's not unusual for a cottage industry of private claims adjusters to develop, who are generally unlicensed and may only want a list of your personal property. New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani says he'll prosecute those who would prey on recent victims of the terrorist attack.
This is a difficult time. It's a time in which people are more susceptible, more vulnerable than usual. And there are always, unfortunately, people trying to take advantage of that. But if we catch you, then we're going to try very hard to put you in jail. On that note, Governor.
Other consumer issues Schneider cautions people about are insurance companies going broke and leaving the area or being hassled by the company.
The insurance company may act friendly and may lull the insured into not filing a claim in paper and thereby waiving their rights after 30 days or whatever the time limit is. Or they might just be very difficult to deal with and not pay off until the consumer gets very fed up and just says, oh, okay, just whatever you give me, I just need to get out of here.
This week, insurance company partner Re estimates a $400 million payout to clients involved in the World Trade Center attack, but Mark Papps, Executive Vice President of Corporate Affairs, says the total industry has been hit with a record payout.
The numbers that we have seen on the life side looks like it would run between $2 and $5 billion. So this is, in terms of a total industry event, is somewhere between $20 and $25 billion from our perspective. It's a lot of money. I don't think anybody had ever run any scenarios that had two 757s running into the World Trade Center. I mean, it's just not something that you would ever envision. So I think the scope and the spectrum of potential risk and potential loss has gotten bigger.
Bob Hunters, the director of insurance for the Consumer Federation of America, he says the insurance industry is richly capitalized and will be able to handle the payout from the terrorist attack damage. But he adds that airlines facing negligent lawsuits may need to be bailed out with federal assistance.
The airlines are looking to Congress for some kind of liability limits in this situation to make sure that those kinds of claims, once they've gone through their insurance, which will be billions, I mean, the insurance will be probably of the order of $3 billion on the two airlines that hit. But once they get up over that, then I think there might be some either indemnification or immunities being looked to pass in Congress.
Analysts say last week's attack will fundamentally change the way the insurance industry looks at risk for large buildings and national monuments. They're now likely to consider separate policies to provide for terrorist attacks at an additional price. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jeff Brady in New York.
Free Speech Radio News is a production of Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Please tune in again tomorrow for another edition of Free Speech Radio News.